Do you like Vikings?
Do you like medieval history?
Do you like Iceland?
Do you like complex, sometimes generational feuds fueled by the honor culture of a small-scale society in the medieval North?
Well, if your answer to any of these questions is yes, you'll want to join us for Saga Thing, a podcast where we review the sagas of medieval Iceland.
Now, for over a decade, we have been telling the stories of Iceland's first settlers and their families.
And their feuds over sheep.
And in each episode, we break down a different saga, unraveling its intricate plot, discussing the characters, and providing historical context to transport you back to a time of warriors, kings, and incredible feats of both martial and legal prowess.
And don't worry if you're new to the world of the sagas. We're here to make it accessible and entertaining for everyone.
And when we're done reviewing each saga, we take it to the Saga Thing, where we provide an official body count and judge the saga for things like best bloodshed, nicknames, and notable witticisms.
We weigh the actions of the heroes and villains, sending one into exile and welcoming the other into our esteemed Halls of Thingmen.
So, if you like medieval stuff and want to know more about what Vikings did when they were at home,
grab a hornful of mead and join us. Check out Saga Thing.
I'm Michelle.
And I'm Lucy.
Welcome to Tudoriferous, the biographical podcast that examines lives in the Tudor era.
And today, Margaret of Burgundy / Margaret of York.
Yes.
This is going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to this.
Yes.
And I can put my feet up because you're going to do it all.
I'm going to do it. It's been a while. But I'm back. Come with me, if you will. You wake up to screaming. The acrid smell of smoke instantly overwhelms you with fear and you start coughing. You scramble to grab whatever meager possessions you can. This can't be happening. This can't be happening. My service to the Duchess only started yesterday. People are continuing to scream, some in fear, some in pain. You manage to get through the press of bodies in the servants' quarters and get outside. People are injured from the chaotic rush of bodies pressing through doors. Some appear to have been trampled. You turn and look at the once stunning palace of the Duchess. It is quickly being engulfed in flames. The Duchess is directing people to care for those injured and ordering others with goods to where they need to be. As you catch your breath, you see her turn and look at her palace, with all her goods beginning to fall in on itself, the flames reflected in her sorrowful eyes. On to Margaret.
Yes. Okay.
Before we start, I want to explain how I've prepared this, because you're going to hear things that I say that completely contradict everybody else, and things that I agree with that will make a little bit of sense. The problem with Margaret is there is a huge amount of speculation. And the reason we have that speculation is because Louis the 11th, who will be one of our next Patreon, I've got him written, or I've got him read and researched. I need to write him.
Okay.
Spread rumors after rumor after rumor about her. So we're
bad rumors.
Bad rumors. Well, it's weird. He mixed in plausible reality rumors with malicious rumors to make the malicious rumors more believable. What is that saying? Sprinkle in two parts truth, one part lie? I heard that somewhere.
And then you get the no smoke without fire bit, don't you?
Yeah. So wheedling through, I'd have to go back to the original documents that were difficult to obtain and then compare them to the Calendar State Papers. And try to wheedle out what actually was correct. So my version may or may not be correct, but I tried to do this as unbiased as possible, which is going to be funny because I started not really liking her and ended up liking her. But because of that speculation, it is going to be a little hazy in a weird way. Usually it's hazy or unsure because we don't have anything at all. Now we just have really contradictory records. So,
and then you've got Henry the Seventh wading in with rumors and malicious comments.
Yes.
And being the diabolical Duchess.
Yes. So what I'm specifically focusing on is what we know she has done, and there is corroborative evidence for it. As in, we see the payments in her financial accounts going out to this particular thing. I tried to keep it in the realm of this is hard evidence, but at the same time, I am going to mention a couple because they were seriously interesting rumors, and they affected her life and England.
Ooh,
I'm still going to add in some rumors, and I will try to say this was rumor or we are not 100% sure. But it was actually...
Well, it sort of doesn't matter. If it does affect her, it's a story as well, isn't it?
Yes. And I actually really enjoyed this one. It was a lot more like deciphering clues instead of just finding things and reading them. I was like, is that true? I don't know. Where can I find more info? It was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I'm getting waves of Perkin coming back to me now.
He is in this.
I should imagine he will be.
So with all that, let's begin. Surprise! We have her birth date.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A woman. A woman with a birth date.
Not even the eldest daughter.
Goodness.
She has a birth date. Margaret was born on the 3rd of May in 1446.
Nice.
Yeah.
A spring birthday.
Yeah. To what may be considered a loving marriage and family. Like we've heard before, people shuffled off their children to nurses and nannies and stuff. But the reason we think that it was a loving marriage is that Cecily, her mother, and Richard, her father, the Duke of York, spent an enormous amount of their time together. So we've heard of others where the man goes off to fill a post and the wife stays home to care for the properties, basically be an estate manager. But when Richard goes off on his postings in Calais and Ireland, Cecily goes with him.
I was just thinking about that moment in the War of the Roses where he has to leg it quickly to Ireland.
Yeah.
And she and Edward and Richard, I suppose, or maybe...
Yes, and Margaret stay behind.
They're just left standing in the town square.
Yes.
Waiting for the soldiers to come.
Yes.
Which didn't sound very loving to me. It sounded as if he just said, right, you're on your own, I'm off.
Actually, from what I could find...
But did he have a reason?
Possibly. Cecily told him to go. Cecily has an inn with Margaret of Anjou.
Right.
She's not in danger.
Ah.
So if she stays behind... There's a chance that they can retain their property.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure on that, but that is some of the documentation.
Well, I think we're doing Cecily.
We are not, because she's well before Henry VII.
Yeah, no, we're doing a Cecily. Which Cecily are we doing?
We're going to be doing Cecily of York, I believe Elizabeth of York's sister? Younger sister.
Is that the one we went for?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
I believe so, which is her granddaughter. Yeah. Yeah. Granddaughter? Yes, granddaughter.
Yeah.
Cecily was often with him to every other post except for that one time of flight, which is unusual. And additionally, quite often in the records, we see the children in the same household as the parents.
Wow.
Yeah. Different. Margaret is the sixth of 12 children.
Ouch.
Yeah, one mom, single mom, yes. 12 children. And she would be the third daughter. This makes having her birthday even more surprising.
Mm.
But they recorded every child's birth.
Unless it was for astrological purposes.
Yeah, but why would other people not do it then? It's unusual. She was born to a Duke and Duchess of York, not a king or a queen, but all her life she would consider herself a princess, and it appears that her parents were encouraging that thought in their children.
because he had an eye on the throne, or, well, he had his hand on the throne, didn't he? And everyone said, oh, no, take your hand off.
If we go back before he did that, the family and quite a bit of England believed that he was the rightful king. If you remember, Henry Bolingbroke took the crown from Richard II. But Henry was the son, the third son, not the second son. The York line comes through the elder son. So technically, legally, if Richard II had died, it would have been the York family that should have been kings, not the Lancastrian Bolingbrokes. So interesting that they subtly instilled that in their children all the way through. Like, you're just asking for trouble at that point.
Yeah, it certainly explains parts of the behaviour of her siblings anyway.
Yes, yes it does. The family not only believed that her father was the rightful king of England, but that the son of Queen Margaret of Anjou was not Henry VI. If you remember, he was catatonic when the boy was born.
Yes.
And many felt that Henry VI was too pious and not mentally well enough to perform the deed. So they believed that the son was the bastard.
Perform the dirty deed. Yes.
PG-13. And then I say bastard. I'm sorry. Bastard's the technical term. Natural son.
Oh, yeah.
When Margaret was born, though, England was only beginning to see the troubles brewing in England. In fact, Margaret herself, because of that connection with Cecily, Cecily named her Margaret after the Queen Margaret of Anjou. Margaret is her namesake. So you can see that there's...
Not just because everybody's called Margaret.
No, specifically the namesake of Margaret of Anjou. We won't go into more detail with the Wars of the Roses to get to the point where her brother becomes king. Suffice it to say, her brother becomes king.
And that's Edward.
That's Edward, yes.
Yes.
I did find a few connections in Margaret's early life interesting. She and Margaret Beaufort are second cousins. Not that distant.
No.
She was possibly born, but definitely raised at Fotheringhay Castle.
All right. Oh, I have been there.
Yeah. There is speculation about that. Some people say that she was born at the Abbey of Holy Cross, but there's nothing in their records, and we still have their records saying that she was born there.
Right.
So I'm saying no. I bring up Fotheringhay because Mary, Queen of Scots, we will be discussing it when she's there.
Yes, yes. She probably wish she weren't there, though.
Yeah, she spent her last days there and was executed there.
Yes, she did.
But for Margaret, we can't think of Fotheringhay as this rundown place, a place to stuff an ex-queen. It was still a constant use holding of the York family. It was well kept up. It was lavishly furnished whenever they were in place. And they left quite a large retinue behind to maintain the grounds. Apparently the hunting there is beautiful, or was beautiful.
I think it was Richard III's favourite place, wasn't it? I think that was his favourite castle.
I don't know.
I could be wrong. I'm sure Ricardians will tell me, because it's the sort of thing they'd know. But I thought, yeah.
It was apparently quite state-of-the-art and wonderful.
I don't think there's much of it left, from what I recall.
Probably not, because it was run down. Elizabeth didn't originally want to send her to Fotheringhay because of how run down it was. And that's her time, so it's not very long. It was also the seat of local government and church government in the area. So she would have been surrounded by ecclesiastics. Yes, she is going to be one of those exceptionally pious women that we cover. We also need to see Margaret the way she saw herself in order to put her actions and attitudes in perspective. So yes, she was a princess, but she wasn't just a princess. She was royalty and connected to many other royal lines. She's related to the King of Scotland, Isabella of Castile, Ferdinand of Aragon, King Alfonso of Portugal, and Maximilian, the soon-to-be Holy Roman Empire,
emperor.
Yeah, she's like Boris Johnson. He's meant to be related to all the crowned heads of Europe.
Oh, I bet you they're saying, please don't be. Please don't be.
Yes. Nope, nothing to do with us.
Nope. Margaret was their equal in her mind. Margaret's father, Richard, was lieutenant in France, caring for the crown's holdings there. He was well-loved in both Burgundy and Normandy, which says a lot for him and his style of rule, considering the Hundred Years' War is occurring.
Yes, and he was well-loved in Ireland as well.
Yes, when he gets there, same thing. Yeah. Must have been so charismatic. And I don't know if he was caring for them. I didn't go too much into research about him. But Margaret does mention that at one point, well, I say mention, it's another rumor. When she tried to defend Clarence's actions and reconcile the two brothers, she had firm faith that they would because they had the gentle character of her father.
Mm.
Which, again, is somebody else saying that? That was Edward Hall later on, I believe. So whether or not that actually occurred, I don't know. But we do know that he was very well liked.
Maybe he was just sensible and didn't wind people up.
Hopefully.
Didn't pull their beards in Ireland or anything.
Oh, dear. Oh, man. Margaret may have learned the importance of her own personal attention to her estates, running the estate and personal attention to her finances from her father's exceptionally poor handling of his own. And the financial troubles that ended up there as a result. We'll see that in the future, that instead of leaving it to her counselors or to estate manager, she was entirely hands-on, the same as Henry VII. Mm. Little notes in the margins.
They'd have probably got on really well if they'd met, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They could have talked about accounting and...
Yes.
Yeah, and lovely chess. Time.
As Margaret was growing up, the relations between her father and the crown went extremely sour.
Mm-hmm.
This, of course, had a direct effect on her life. To make a decent marriage, a noble girl's parents have to be prominent at court and in good standing with the king. Otherwise, no one would want to associate with the family. Why would you?
No, you've got treason hanging over you.
Yes.
Possible treason, yeah.
Yes.
You're tainting and, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine they wouldn't touch you with a barge pole, would they?
No, and I find it interesting that even though through all this was happening, Margaret's older sisters got married.
All right.
Yeah.
They're good marriages.
Yes, actually.
Hmm.
This is an aside, but it does clear up something we spoke about in the rebellions earlier. Margaret's parents were sent to rule over Ireland in the name of the king. We were mentioning that. During a time when the conflict between Richard of York and the king had died down a little. While there, Richard, her father, again became very popular in Ireland. And Cecily, Margaret's mother, gave birth to George, Duke of Clarence.
Yes, he was born in Ireland.
Yes.
And that made a big difference, didn't
it? Yes, his godparents were Irish. And apparently the birth was such a joyous occasion in Ireland. It was celebrated widely, not just in their home, as if he was a prince born in Ireland.
Hmm.
So, Lambert Simnel... probably fed off of that.
I would imagine he would have done. Yeah. We haven't done him yet, but... Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I was wondering if that's the reason why. It was because of his supposed grandfather, Richard.
Yes. And also, that's why the rumour that young Edward... No, I have a special friend, Plantagenet.
Yeah, was still in Ireland.
Might have been taken over to Ireland because George knew that he'd find a welcome there. So, wheels within wheels.
Yes.
Within wheels, within wheels.
We don't have a record of where Margaret was during her parents' tenure in Ireland. She would have been young, but she's the sibling just older than George. There was a great deal of unrest, as you can imagine, but it seems that Margaret and her mother were able to stay relatively comfortable during the Wars of the Roses, even when her father was attainted. This is where the Margaret of Anjou connection seems to have appeared to help the family. Henry VI ensured provision was made for Cecily and her children of 1,000 marks a year for a family that had been attainted.
Yeah, that's not peanuts, is it?
No. And I don't see that happening elsewhere for other women. Yeah, interesting thoughts. In 1460, we get a rare glimpse of her Youngs through the Paston letters. I love the Paston letter. John Paston, who was by this time the executor of John Fastolf's, wrote that while Margaret, along with her mother Cecily and brothers George and Richard, were staying in Fastolf's Crosby House in London, they were visited regularly by the Earl of March. This is Margaret's older brother and future King of England. So Richard and his eldest son Edmund are on the run. But Edward's still moving around freely too. Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah, I thought they'd all rushed over to Calais.
Nope.
Okay.
The other thing that's interesting, which seems somewhat unimportant, but I really like this. Children as young as 8 were sent to other families to learn. They'd leave the nursery and go elsewhere. Margaret's older sisters were. Margaret was not. Margaret was kept with her mother. She was 14 at this point. And she stayed with her mother. So I don't know if it's because the family isn't tainted. And if it was, why weren't the older sisters returned? And if it's not, was it just affection that kept them together? Because she's also
a sickly child?
No, not at all. And she's there with Richard and Clarence.
Maybe she wouldn't go. Maybe she stamped her foot and said, no,
I am not leaving this house. I don't know. It doesn't mean. Okay. We're speculating that because she's there, that it was loving. Cecily does seem to keep her children with her longer than most other women. So that's why we think it was a loving household, which would make sense later when we discuss Margaret's attitude and behavior towards her stepchildren.
And also 12 children. I mean, that's quite excessive, isn't it? I mean,
to have
big families, but 12.
Yeah, 12. 12 children.
You must have either kept wanting the children.
Or you were very
happy
with
your
husband.
Or had a very loving relationship, yes.
Yes.
Either way, it works well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. What we do know for sure is that she had very intense training and education. And we know this because she was literate in multiple languages. Literacy for women was not a thing yet. We keep getting flipping back and forth between after a certain age and before a certain age. Yeah. Margaret's from the before a certain age where women were taught to keep the household and use a scribe. You were not taught to read. You were to hire a male secretary. They would do all their reading and writing for you. Just don't bother reading. She was taught to read.
I wonder if she insisted on it. I mean, it's hard for a child to insist on something, but she loved books later, didn't she?
She did.
She and Caxton. Mm-hmm. Shared a love of books. I wonder if she just said, look, please let me, I really want to do it.
The suggestion by most historians, and I think I agree with this, is that royal women were taught to read. Queens were literate.
Oh, right, yes.
And you are a princess, so you need to be literate.
Princess in waiting, yes.
Yes. Mm. You're not actually a princess, but we're calling you a princess. So like a royal child would have been, she was able to read and write in French and possibly English. That's a bit back and forth. French is still the language of the court.
Yeah.
And then you get where rumor starts popping in, because you get a lot of people mentioning that she couldn't read and write well. Like as if it's a backhanded, okay, you can read, but you're not very good at it. But I've been reading documents from that time, and French, just like English, was regional. Depending on where you were, people spelled things differently. People used different grammar. So I don't believe that basing her writing on a comparison to any one French example means that she would be bad at reading and writing French. I think it's just a regional thing, and I think that's part of the malicious rumors trying to take her down a peg. That have come through.
Yeah, because that would be something she'd be proud of.
Yes.
So that would be the thing to go for.
Yes. And we know later in life, you brought up Caxton, She edits Caxton's French translations to make them correct.
Oh, yeah, she tells him first to get a move on.
Yeah.
And then to do it properly.
Yes. So how could she be poor at French grammar and language if she was able to edit something that then went into print?
Mm. And you would think it wouldn't be such a slur, given how often we've seen, this is my book, it's not very good, I'm not very good at writing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a trope in those days, wasn't it? So, yeah, you wouldn't think that people would be that upset about it. You'd assume people wouldn't believe it.
No, but when you mingle it in with other nasty rumors, it's just compounding, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. And some of those rumors seem to have stuck without any evidence, and others were like, no, she never did this. It's like, where did you come across something that made you so certain on either side? Mm. I don't know. When her father and oldest brother Edmund were killed in December of 1460, Margaret had an example of calm, speedy, logical response to the disaster that she would emulate in her own future catastrophes. Her mother arranged for her two youngest sons to be moved to safety in Burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
The ties with Burgundy appear to already have been developing, but not with Charles the Bold. You would think it would be Burgundy. No. Louis the 12th was in exile in Burgundy. That's the son of the King of France, Charles.
Yeah.
And they hated each other. And he sided enthusiastically with the Yorkists, despite his own father, who was siding with Margaret of Anjou. So you're going to Burgundy. Right. Technically, you'll be under the control of Burgundy, but really, you're under Louis the 12th from France, who's also sort of in exile in Burgundy, all despite the French father.
They were quite like the Georges, weren't they?
Yes.
This French family at this time.
Yes. Yes, yes. I'm not sure how she did it, but Cecily managed to smuggle, basically, her sons out, negotiate with Margaret and Henry to remain cared for with her daughter. And she stayed calm through all this. It was sort of likened to her working within the eye of a hurricane.
Mm.
You just had somebody who was sensible.
Well, maybe, yes, if she's sensible and Richard is sensible, that's probably why they were popular wherever they went.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you can just do without people just waging war for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Running about screaming. You just want somebody who's going to be
yes. Yes. Charles the Bold opposed the Yorkists because he resented Louis's influence on Burgundy. So it's not even a real safe place for her to be. So Louis from France, who's in exile, is supporting the Yorkists. Charles the Bold, which is the son of the current Duke Philip, is opposing them, but that's where they're going to go. I would have thought Ireland would have been safer.
Yeah.
But Louis is paying for them, paying for their upkeep. So maybe it was the finances.
Maybe there's no one in Ireland who would do it. There's only Kildare and Desmond.
But you can imagine Charles's father having to balance the two young men, Louis and his son Charles. Like, I need to keep both of you on side. And you guys are now fighting for opposite reasons. He did this by moving George and Richard to, please correct my pronunciation, Utrecht?
I think so, Utrecht. That's what I've always called it, but I'm not certain.
Okay. So they were away from court and kept safely. And Margaret stayed at home with her mother in Baynard's Castle in London. People do mention it was a safe stronghold. There's no such thing as a safe stronghold in London. If they want to get in it, they can get in it. They got in the tower, for goodness sake.
Yes. Or Edmund Dudley's place. I mean, that was meant to be quite quite well fortified.
Yes. So no, there was no safe stronghold. It just, again, shows that Cecily was not worried.
Unless she wanted to be somewhere more populated, so if something did kick off.
Oh, she'd have
maybe
public
there'd
support?
Be somebody around who'd take their side, rather than being out in the middle of nowhere.
In the hinterlands, yeah.
Don't know.
Where whatever is done can be done secretly.
And the news wouldn't get back to London for weeks, probably.
Yes. In June of 1461, Margaret's life took yet another dramatic turn. Her remaining eldest brother, Edward, became king. And Margaret was now the king's sister and a bargaining chip in international politics. And she now formally took the title of princess.
Yes. Well, perhaps she didn't have to change anything on her checkbook or anything. It already said princess.
She can still wear that pink dress with the crown.
Yes. The sparkles.
Give her a little wand. Margaret was now under her brother's authority, and he provided for her. She always had lodgings at several royal buildings. Many he remodeled and furnished for her and her family's use, but often to Margaret's preferred style, which shows that they must have liked her.
Mm. Or they didn't dare cross her.
Possibly, but she's 14. Or, well, she's almost 15.
Well, when we looked at Katerina Sforza and the Patreon things, I mean, she was quite a force to be reckoned with at that age, wasn't she?
Yeah. Hmm.
Hmm.
Margaret, like every other noble, would spend time in each of those upgraded holdings to escape the sewers filling up and the plague. Right. But she traveled, it seems, with the court. She had an income paid by the exchequer rather than the family holdings, but it was modest. Modest. And it didn't pay her bills. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Those were paid separately from another income. The money she was given from the exchequer was like pin money, like an allowance.
All right.
So the government was paying for the princess to be upheld. We don't see this later in Henry VIII. He gives his daughters land and property, and that land and property maintains them.
Mm.
So it's a different
setup. Does this carry on after the Treaty of Picardy when Edward's getting a nice little pension from France?
Yes.
Oh, well, he keeps that then.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't share that.
No. As we mentioned, Margaret's two older sisters were already married before Edward took the throne. So they're not available to Edward as pawns in the political marriage market.
Of course, one of them married John de la Pole.
Mm-hmm. You've got Elizabeth, the Duchess of Suffolk, and Anne, the Duchess of Exeter.
Oh, did she marry Henry Holland?
I don't remember, I didn't look it up.
Ah, if so, I feel very sorry for him, because apparently Henry Holland was a monster.
Oh, no.
I wonder if I've got that right.
I don't know.
Best to set that bit out, because I'm 100% sure, but Exeter is...
All I know is that he fought for the Lancastrians against Anne's family.
Oh, dear.
Awkward. Her brothers George and Richard, both younger than Margaret, soon returned from Burgundy, and the three of them lived together at Greenwich Palace.
Mm.
So this is where everybody says they were particularly close. And is that because they're now older, and instead of being off in different households, learning their, their duties?
Mm.
Warfare. They stayed together for quite a bit. At 15, Margaret was of marriageable age. 12 is marriageable age. So she's ready to go right away, is basically what I'm saying here. Yes. She is an immediate source of possible political intrigue. We don't know for sure if Edward approved, but he would learn fairly quickly that his sister was very interested in politics and their family's dynasty. Her mother...
Well, I suppose she's had that drummed into her from a young age, isn't she? She's been told, called princess.
Yes. Her mother, although a widow now, remained active in politics for the benefit of her family. So she was quite all hands on when Edward was king. And it seems she's the one who taught Margaret how to play the game well in England. Because she could see from a woman who was a dowager that technically had no power whatsoever... She was still able to pull some strings.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suppose she's been in amongst it for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Edward did use Margaret in the political marriage game, and we have a record of a few proposals before 1465. In 1462, the French ambassadors told the King of France that a marriage alliance for her was being negotiated with King James III of Scotland.
Oh.
Yeah. Later, there was a proposed marriage for Margaret to marry a Burgundian prince, which would be, or could be, Charles, the future Duke of Burgundy. But the first serious negotiation was for marriage with her to Don Pedro of Aragon. This marriage was proposed and urged by the Duchess Isabel of Burgundy.
Is that Ferdinand's half-brother or something?
I didn't go too much into him. Oh. All I know is he is a pretender to the crown of Aragon. So he is a Don, but apparently he figured he should be king. So if she ended up married to him, she'd be in the same situation she'd been in all her life.
Yes, I was just thinking about Ferdinand was given Sicily, I think, by his dad as a thank you for not rebelling against me like your brother did.
Yeah, so, I believe so.
So I'm assuming that that must be him.
Yeah. Duchess Isabel of Burgundy was related to Don Pedro. She was his aunt through Portugal. Everything's a web.
Yes, I know. We must look at Portugal at some point because it's sort of in there.
The only reason Margaret didn't marry Don Pedro was because he died.
Okay.
Like that was a done deal, and then he died. Isabel, the Duchess of Burgundy, is interested in who gets married to who with the Yorkists because she herself is also a granddaughter of John of Gaunt.
Right.
So she has a stake.
That's the fountainhead, isn't it?
Yes.
Of everything.
Thanks, John of Gaunt. Stop sleeping with women. Other references for her for the first 3 years of her brother's reign don't really exist. But after 1464, Lady Margaret, quote, the king's sister, unquote, that's how she was titled, is mentioned a lot more often. One of the first mentions is her attendance at the coronation of Elizabeth Woodville as queen. Yeah, she was third in line behind her two elder sisters and sat on the queen's left hand at the banquet. And I wondered about this. So, yes, Elizabeth is now queen. She has sisters, because we know that's one of the things that got everybody ticked off was all of her sisters were being married out to nobles. But
two massive families there.
Yeah. And the king's sisters outranked the queen's sisters. So it's interesting that the king's sisters got to go forward in the procession. So her two older sisters, then her. So right after the queen, it was Elizabeth, Anne, Margaret, and then the queen's sisters. I thought that was interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
Like they're outranked. Weird. Anyway.
Would it be difficult because the Woodvilles were not of the same rank, really, were they? And blimey, didn't people keep going on about it? Do you think it'd be difficult for them? King's sisters to be behind these upstarts.
Yeah, and a king does outrank a queen no matter what you do. So maybe his family automatically outranks the queen's family because of that? I don't know. It's interesting that there are... I'd like to do it, but I don't think I'm ever going to find time. There are books of precedence that you can read from that time. And they're thick.
Yes, and the heralds were meant to know it all, weren't they?
Yes. Who can sit near who? Who has to sit on the left or right? Who has to sit under a table, which apparently is a thing during some of these?
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the coronations, the feast after the coronation, somebody had to sit under the table of the queen while she ate for 3 hours. I'll have to look that up. We mentioned it before.
But you can see why fights break out in funerals and things. You just get those little precedent wrong.
Yes. And fans of Pride and Prejudice, when Lydia comes home and tells, "No, Jane, you must go lower, for I am a married woman."
The married one, yes.
Yes. Interesting, interesting. I'd love to understand how they kept all that together. Anyway, as we continue, she was now one of the ladies that attended the queen, so she was at court constantly now. We don't get much about Margaret's character, though. The only thing we do get is that it's noted that she seldom smiled. and that she was reserved in company and kept quiet. Ooh. I'm not sure if that's out of proper behavior, but if it's noted, it makes me think she was sad or something.
Or perhaps she just had that sort of piety that thought that any sort of fun was inherently evil.
Fun is a sin.
Yeah. Not like Margaret Beaufort, it turns out.
No. Man, I wish we had done her again. I've found so many more mentions about her that were not included in any of the biographies or papers I found at the time.
Well,
anyway.
Well, when we come to bring it all together, I mean, since she was too delicious when it comes mm-hmm. to the playoffs, can add all those bits.
Yes. We're getting close to those playoffs.
Mm.
Yeah, we're actually going to finish Henry the VII's season.
We've got a few ideas about the end as well, which we're going to put to the patrons.
Yes. In a way, Don Pedro's dying ended up being a really good thing for Margaret. She had not won the hand of Charles of Burgundy the first time he was in the marriage market. But the year prior to Don Pedro's dying, Charles's second wife also passed away.
Oh, good.
Childbirth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everything's worked out fine.
Yeah. This left both of them available for a very important marriage. As mentioned earlier, Isabel of Portugal, the Duchess of Burgundy, Charles's mother, was related to the English crown through John of Gaunt. And for some reason, she associated herself most closely with the English part of her family rather than the Portuguese part of her family.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Why? I don't know. She specifically encouraged an English marriage. She's the one that brought it forward to her husband, Philip. She's the one that was trying to push it on her son. This is not the first time Isabel had proposed marriage between the Yorkists and her son. Earlier in 1446, she tried to marry her son to Anne of York, Margaret's older sister, years before Edward was king, and when it would not have helped Burgundy politically. It actually would have been disastrous.
Mm.
They would have been dragged into the War of the Roses.
Yes. And
yet she was still, marry them.
Yeah, but she wouldn't have been that much of a, catch at that point.
No, not at all. You're a duchess. You're not a foreign princess. No. You're not going to give us anything. There is no political gain there. In fact, it's a political drain.
Mm.
Hey, it rhymes.
Put it on a t-shirt.
These marriage negotiations with Burgundy and England for Margaret took 2 years to accomplish, and it was so shaky that John Paston decided that he would put a bet against the fact that it wouldn't actually happen.
Right, okay. Well, 2 years doesn't seem much at all. I mean, when we look at Arthur and Catherine of Aragon, I mean,
yes,
many
but
more.
But then you look at Mary and Louis, and wasn't that like just 6 months or something?
Well, I suppose he was getting on and he was not in good health, so we need to pull out all the stops there.
Mm-hmm. We need to get some background regarding Burgundy in order for the rest of her life to make much more sense from here on. And sorry, it's a history lesson. Burgundy itself is not just the Duchy of Burgundy, which is what I thought. It is a vast collection of wealthy holdings, counties, or countries. And these include the Duchy of Burgundy, of course, Artois, Flanders, Charolais, all of which the Duke of Burgundy owes fealty to the French king for.
Yeah, it's so complicated. Yeah.
But the collection of properties also includes Brabant, Zeeland, Holland, Hainault, as well as the County of Burgundy, which is separate from the Duchy of Burgundy, also known as Franche-Comte. A number of these areas were only recently conquered by Charles's father, Philip the Bold. We won't reference a map. What I do want to note is that not all of these areas touched each other.
Hmm. Well, that was Burgundy here and Burgundy there, wasn't there? Burgundy over here and Burgundy over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if anybody's taken political geography, the more stable states are clustered in a group, literally in a circle around the center of power. The more elongated or disparate, like broken apart, the less stable that government can be. There, I summed up an entire semester in a sentence.
Well, that makes sense. Certainly makes sense, yes. Especially when you've got Martin Schwartz marauding about. I mean, you do need safety in numbers.
Yes. And you have the delicate balance of him giving fealty to the Holy Roman Emperor for some of those lands and the French king for some of those lands.
Mm.
Loads of fun. Whenever Charles needed to travel from one landholding to another, he had to negotiate with other rulers to gain permission so he could go visit each one of his holdings. Can you imagine how much of a nightmare that would be? I would like to come through your territory with my army.
Yes, to get to my territory.
To get to my other territory. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Maximilian had it cushy, really. I mean, all right, it was stretched off a huge area, but at least it was all joined up.
Yeah. This conglomeration of properties is also the wealthiest in Europe. It is the wealthiest for trade and for production.
Hmm.
So the Dukes of Burgundy were extremely wealthy.
Mm.
Politically, in the past, the Dukes of Burgundy and their loyalty to either England or France during the Hundred Years' War more often than not determined who won that current section of the fight.
Right.
So it is incredibly important to have Burgundy on your side. Even though he already owes fealty to the French. It very much is very confusing. The current Duke Charles is extremely anti-French. This was due to the loss of more territory, more Burgundian territory, to Louis XI in 1463. Louis wasn't having any of this, so he started clawing back some of that land from him. People interested in the history of World War I will know one of the greatest areas of dispute between the French king and the Dukes of Burgundy. And that's the area of the Somme.
The Somme, yes.
Yeah. It was originally under the holdings of Duke of Burgundy, but became part of France because of Louis XI. And Charles was not accepting this.
No, well, so why would he?
It was Charles's aggression to Louis that had led him to agree to the marriage, nothing else.
not attraction.
No.
Oh, poor now, Margaret.
Yeah. Now, Louis, on the other hand, desperately needed to prevent an Anglo-Burgundian alliance, and he may have thought he had axed the marriage before the marriage negotiations could have even begun, because he had supported Warwick and Edward prior to them becoming the king and the duke.
Yes.
So he had helped them, supported them, provided them money and apparently some troops.
Yes.
I made you king.
Yeah.
You should not have this marriage. And top of that, in the opposite vein, he now has Queen Margaret of Anjou and her son alive and well in his lands and under his protection. So he could not only say, I made you king, but I'm holding your biggest threat.
Yes.
So why on earth would Edward entertain a marriage that could force Louis to support Margaret of Anjou and start this War of the Roses all over again?
Mm. Do we know why?
Several reasons.
All right.
We do. The first, which is the one that makes Warwick the most angry, is the influence of Edward's wife, Elizabeth Woodville.
Right.
She and her family are pro-Burgundian because of the familial relationship between Elizabeth's mother, Jacquetta of Luxembourg.
Right.
Luxembourg and Burgundy are allies and family relations.
Mm. Okay.
She has no family relations with France. Second, and possibly more importantly, trade with Burgundy was vital to the economy of England.
Yes. Yes, it didn't stop Henry saying, nope, cut it completely. I don't like
this. Yes.
But yeah, it really backfired.
Yeah. if they lose the trade with Burgundy, England loses out on everywhere they can send their wool cloth, their wool. They can't bring in things. It's always like, yes, I need to sell my stuff to you. But it's also, when I bring stuff from you, you're going to increase the cost of selling it to me. Customs duties and what's that called? Tariffs. Mm. Lovely tariffs that never seem to work. In regards to that trade, a possible alliance with the French may drastically harm the English economy because Charles was so anti-French. He could punish England.
Right, yes.
Through that. Third, the entire merchant community of England was pushing for an alliance with Burgundy, hoping for better trade treaties. Mm. England had been suffering economically because of the Wars of the Roses. The only source of income for those merchants that they could possibly make more money through is Burgundy. That's it. They don't have another option. So, of course, they've got petitions going before the king saying, you need to get the trade treaties done. Our current rate of exchange for currency is unprofitable. We're failing, basically. And those treaties, in marriage treaties, it could include customs, duties, taxes, exchange rates for currency, and little trade embargoes against other countries.
Why didn't we use this one for our Valentine's Day episode? This loving relationship based on tariffs and taxes and treaties.
I don't know. Maybe we'll do a full description of Margaret and Charles's marriage for the next Valentine's, because there's a lot of detail. The initial marriage negotiation didn't just include Margaret. There is also talk of a double marriage with the older brother of Edward, Clarence, the elder brother, ooh, not Richard.
He's the lucky recipient.
Mary of Burgundy, Charles's daughter and sole heir.
Yes, because I remember we said what a lucky escape she'd had. Even the fact she got Maximilian, she still had a lucky escape.
She still had a lucky escape, yes. And this is where you are going to find that I wholly and emphatically disagree with a lot of YouTube videos and other books and articles. If you watch some YouTube videos, they will say that the marriage between Clarence and Mary was refused by Charles of Burgundy.
What?
No. Edward dropped it. Edward canceled it. That's one of the reasons why Clarence was so angry with his brother.
Oh, right. Was that because he was doing a Henry and wanting to make alliances with as many places as possible?
No. If George married Mary and Charles and Margaret didn't have any sons, George would now be the Duke of Burgundy and outrank his brother in wealth.
Oh. Yeah, you don't want that.
No. So he scotched it. He said no. And I was getting really angry with some of these things saying, Charles did this. I'm like, show me where. Show me where in those negotiations that it was Charles. Couldn't. They couldn't.
It's amazing how cross you can get when you know something that you've just discovered, really, about something that maybe this time last year had no interest in whatsoever.
Yes.
You can find yourself shouting at books like, no, he didn't.
Yes, where did you get that? Yes. I'm looking at the documents here. So yeah, no, Edward scotched it. When Louis found out about the negotiations, he quickly dove in and proposed various other options for Margaret's hand. I do not want a Burgundian alliance. Yeah. He cannot have this. He is going to be in trouble. For England, you could not ask for more. They were being courted by both France and Burgundy, two of the wealthiest, most powerful political entities in Europe, both closest to England and the most danger to England.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Scotland. I just realized how that sounded in my head. I was like, yes. Sorry, but you hadn't actually taken them over. And there's a lot more people and population in Burgundy and France.
Yes, Scotland, you were dangerous too.
Yes. Unfortunately, this marriage game really turned into an us against them situation in England between the Woodville family and Warwick.
Yeah.
Warwick proposing and encouraging the French match and the Woodvilles wanting the Burgundian match. Possibly just because they didn't like Warwick.
Yeah.
And Warwick would continue to have more influence.
Mm. I should imagine he was quite hard work, Warwick.
I don't think I would have liked him.
No.
Okay, let's talk about what France is offering, because I've never heard this before.
Okay.
I've never heard of this before. Louis was so intent on getting this marriage and this alliance against Burgundy that he was willing to take Margaret without a dowry.
Ooh.
To pay the entire cost of her wedding, pay for her upkeep until the wedding, pay for her trousseau, and double her dower lands.
Hmm. That's, so Edward doesn't...
Oh, and give Edward a French pension.
Yes.
That was tacked on at the end.
Hmm. So Edward's not paying for anything of this, presumably.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He'd be out of pocket. Absolutely nothing.
So it's, yeah, when you think about Ferdinand and Henry bickering over the minutiae of these things.
I've got that in here. I'm going to pull everything I can out of this negotiation with your father. No, no, I'll give everything for you.
Yeah.
Wow. Why wouldn't you just go, okay.
Yeah.
And Warwick was, of course, very happy with the terms he had managed to negotiate with the French.
Well, especially since, I mean, if you've got terms like that, you're going to come back really on a cloud, aren't you, saying, you'll never guess what I've managed to get for you. And then for them to say,
no,
I don't think so.
Yeah.
He'd be fuming.
I can understand why he'd be fuming and why he'd be flabbergasted.
Yeah.
This has never happened before in the history of negotiating marriages, and this is what you're going to say no to.
They turned it down.
They turned it down. They turned it down. I'm reading the books, and I'm going back and looking at the calendar state papers and going, what is wrong with you? What the heck? I'm not a political person, and even I can see this is better than nothing.
Yeah, it's not as if Edwards was a particularly wealthy court. I mean, he could do with the money.
They were broke.
Yeah.
After the War of the Roses, they were broke.
I had borrowed a lot from the Medici Bank as well, didn't it? They couldn't pay back.
Yes. Yes.
Hmm. Idiot.
And then, if you take your view off of Edward and look over to the side a bit, you see Elizabeth Woodville with Margaret having a little chat. And they decide to make their voices known for what they want.
Hmm?
This comes down to a time where a woman does not really have that kind of political clout, where she can just walk up and say, no, I choose this.
Hmm.
They orchestrated this beautifully. They went to Elizabeth's brother, Anthony, Lord Scales,
mm-hmm.
and asked him to hold a tournament. And a beautifully large orchestrated performance begins. A large number of Burgundian nobles were in England for these negotiations, and they were going to be in the tournament. They were going to be heroes. They were going to be knights. They were famous around the world for being great at tournaments. They're on display for all of London and all of those merchants that desperately want the trade agreements to see.
Mm.
Either Margaret of her own devising or her and Elizabeth together, they go for popular support instead of a direct, I want this. And I thought that was brilliant.
Well, they wouldn't get it if they just said, I want, will they?
No, but to think that they could do this and pull in the London merchants on their side by putting on a show, that's quite surprising to me.
Mm. That's quite a lot of lateral thinking there.
Yeah. Oh. And it seems to work. It was during this tournament that word came that Philip of Burgundy, Charles's father, had died. So Charles was now not just the heir of Burgundy, he was the Duke of Burgundy. So now the negotiations shift slightly. And they go sideways for England very quickly, and I can't figure out how Edward managed to continue with his decision to marry Margaret to Charles of Burgundy. We have heard what Louis was offering.
Mm.
Everything. Charles does the opposite. He doesn't offer anything. There is a trade agreement and treaties, but he demands a £200,000 dowry. That Margaret be presented to him with a great quantity of jewels, plate, clothing, attendants, and a bodyguard at the cost of England.
Okay. These tariffs and they must have weighed up.
The
amount that they would be getting for the wedding and the amount that would be coming into the country from better trade agreements, I suppose.
Yeah, so if you look at it evenly, just on the financial part, Edward looks immediately like he's paying everything and getting nothing in return.
Mm.
And you're right. Those trade agreements and foreign exchange rate, especially the agreements for the foreign exchange, should in the end provide England with more than that £200,000 dowry. Mm. Should. Because you remember, treaties get tossed out all the time. Yeah. So it's a gamble. It's an investment. And Edward still has to pay out of pocket that money to marry his sister off. And he's broke.
Mm.
He's not getting the pension that France had offered to give him either.
Mm.
Where is he going to get the money? Then we look at it, and the pension may have been more than the trade agreements. We don't honestly know, because a lot of things happened so that, like I said, the trade agreement lasts for as long as this.
But then again, the pension just goes to Edward, whereas the trade agreements favour all the merchants and the people they employ.
Yeah. So Edward's getting nothing out of this. So why on earth would you choose Burgundy?
Maybe he's unfortunately thinking that if he chose France and people saw that him enriching himself at the cost of the country, his tenure on the throne might be considerably shortened.
Possibly. Or if he accepted, then Warwick would definitely be a kingmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's something that I just don't get. And there's an additional thing in this marriage agreement that just made me feel like you've got them down and now you're kicking them in the face. In most marriage agreements between countries, if the wife dies within a certain length of time after the marriage, the dowry, the jewels, and the plate all go back to the father. We saw that battle with Catherine of Aragon.
Yeah.
Edward didn't even get that. In this marriage treaty, only her jewels would be sent back to Edward. They get nothing else.
Right.
Like, why did you agree to this? Why? You're politically putting your country at risk because now Louis can support Margaret of Anjou.
Yeah.
And send her back, which he does.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying out a fortune to marry off your sister. And you're getting nothing in return.
And a link with France has got to be a good idea after 100 years of war.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Why? Who knows? We do know he's exceedingly fond of Margaret. There are many examples later that I'll go over showing how much he cares for his sister. But does that caring for her and her saying, I want this particular marriage, really make you make that kind of a politically disastrous decision?
Is he, Edward and Warwick, fall out quite dramatically? And I know Edward's getting fed up with Warwick. Is he so...
They haven't fallen out until this treaty.
Right.
This treaty is the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm. But I was just wondering if there's a bit of bad feeling between them and he just thinks,
probably
don't mind kicking a bit of sand into Warwick's face.
I know Warwick's got bad feelings. He comes back with that deal for France. Is like, are you dumb?
Yes. Yeah.
And I get it. I get it. I would be sitting there wondering, like, have you gone insane?
Yeah. Have you? I don't think you can have heard me.
No.
You don't pay anything.
Nothing. We get money.
Yes.
We get paid a pension. You yourself get paid a pension.
Yes, just think how much alcohol and food you can buy with that. Go on.
We don't have to go for another war with France. It's taken care of.
We don't have to go cap in hand to the Medici Bank.
No. You might even be able to start paying back some of your loans. I have no idea. Even though the merchants wanted this marriage, their backs went up about having to provide that dowry. Edward has no money. He is basically cap in hand asking for both loans and donations.
Hmm.
Just give me money. I'm never going to get to pay you back.
Yeah.
Give me $5,000. Like, come on. The fact that he had to try to get the money delayed the marriage. He needed a lot of time to get that first installment of the dowry, as well as the money and goods for the trousseau and her traveling.
So was he able to say to the merchants, look, I'm doing this for you. This is all for you, you know.
I am not sure, because he does have a great deal of trouble getting the first installment.
Well, nobody wants to pay up.
No, and they had to build the trousseau. So, a trousseau, for people who don't know, a trousseau is a gathering of the household items that you're going to need when you get married. Household linen, plate, your clothes, chests, that kind of thing.
All right. I always assumed it was just clothes, but yeah, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you did have some clothes, like you'd put in more costly items that would take you a while to get together for clothing then.
Oh.
Now, I don't know if it's the same for everybody, but now it's like your dishes, your china, a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, when I dispatched my daughters, yeah, I made sure that they had a proper toolkit when they went.
For her trousseau, that was not just that. It was her everyday use dinnerware, which for a lot of them wasn't gold. When you were not having state dinners quite often, you'd be eating on wood plates and bowls. I think they're beautiful.
Nicer than gold, I would think.
It also included her furniture, a bed, cloth of gold, bolts and bolts and bolts of cloth for her future clothing. I'm trying to think of Anne of Brittany and all the times I've read. It would probably be at least 100 dresses. All of her horses.
Well, I mean, you're going to need 100 dresses. Goodness me. I mean, look at my wardrobe over there. I've got at least 100 in there.
She would also need her horses for traveling, litters for traveling. Basically everything she needed was supposed to be provided by the father, not by her groom.
Right.
Mm. So not only do you have to be able to gather the money together, you have to have time to build those items, because currently she's been living in Edward's home. Well, he's not going to strip his home to get a letter gold.
No.
So they have to make it. So yes,
yeah,
it does.
Have my bed.
Yeah. I'll sleep on the floor. It delayed the wedding from happening after the treaty was signed. So there's still time between for things to go sideways. And you would think Margaret, who desperately wants a family and desperately wants to be married, is just sitting there going, please, please, please. And I found it fascinating that this is where we first get Margaret's input politically, where she herself is speaking. There is a gentleman, his name is John Cornelius. He is the servant of a Lancastrian, Sir Robert Whittingham. John was found carrying letters from Lancastrian exiles into England. He was tortured and named other people involved in this conspiracy, who under torture then named others.
As you would.
Yes. And one of those named was a Sir Thomas Cook, who had been mayor of London twice.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Thomas Cook was heavily involved in getting the dowry payment together for her marriage. He has now been taken into custody and everything stopped.
Oh.
Margaret steps in, goes straight to her brother and says, please, can you let him go so I can get my dowry and get married?
It's been 4 years. 4 years. I want to be married.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't seem a very nice trait that, this just trample over justice so I can get my stuff.
Yes. She succeeded. He was released. And her dowry was gathered. As soon as Margaret left England, he was retaken.
Released so he can carry on sorting it. All her stuff.
Yeah, you're not released forever. You're only released till she's gone. It's interesting that she had enough to step in there and speak for somebody who was held for treason and get him released. That in itself is huge.
Was he executed afterwards?
I didn't look it up, partly because I didn't want to. I want to think he lived happily ever after. As we have covered before, Warwick is not a happy man.
No, he's not a happy bunny.
No. He is so unhappy that he decides he's going to prevent the marriage. And he's going to do that by preventing the papal dispensation for the marriage between fourth cousins, which is what Margaret and Charles are. Remember, that's in the seventh degree of consanguinity. Mm. It's actually within the fourth degree of consanguinity, which is in, I think it's still now. Isn't that what it is now?
Yeah, but yeah, I would think that was quite a dangerous precedent, given how many royal marriages are close, much closer than that.
Yeah, the Habsburg haven't even begun yet.
No.
When that didn't work, Warwick then tries to prevent the loans for the dowry from being collected. When this didn't work, he and Louis conspired and began spreading rumors and slanders about Margaret, trying to prevent the marriage.
Oh, right.
And Louis would continue with these rumors for a lot of Margaret's life. Of course, because she's a woman, the rumors are entirely about sex.
Hmm.
She's not chaste. She's not
a virgin. I bet she was.
Yes. Oh, and did you hear she has a bastard child? She wasn't ill then. She was away giving birth secretly.
Yeah.
Charles in Burgundy did hear these rumors, didn't believe them, and let it be known that if anybody was found to repeat them, he would have them thrown in the nearest river.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting, lobbing Louis into the nearest river, but yes.
It sounds like mild for somebody who kills people for a living. You think, oh, that's pretty gentle, but it's actually, they'd be drowned.
Yeah. I was going to say they probably wouldn't be able to swim, but yes, he probably actually means in
drowning.
A sack or something.
Possibly. They didn't mention that. I was just thinking all the clothes, you're thrown into the middle of a river. Do you have enough strength to swim to the edge?
No, your aglets are going to drag you down, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes. As you can imagine, Margaret was very not happy with this. We know Warwick ends up dying, but Louis lives for quite some time, and it doesn't seem that Margaret ever forgives him.
No, I don't suppose she would. I mean, she's desperate to get married. He is... he's the problem now, once Warwick's out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is extremely pious, and one of the things that every priest out there is saying to women is, God tells you to marry, be fruitful and multiply.
Mm.
Yeah.
And not beforehand, after the marriage.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Mm. Warwick is not the only person unhappy with this marriage. Many of the English who were not merchants were not happy. They were about to pay a great deal of money for an alliance that may not get them anything.
Mm.
And we know 100% that they were not happy because there were riots and attacks on merchants from Holland and Flanders that were in England at the time.
Is that when people would go up and say bread and cheese, and if they said it with a strange accent, they'd be lynched? Because apparently
didn't look into that. Is that right. Did that happen?
It's at some time, yes. I'm not sure if it's this one, or it could be during the
Magnus? There's the Intercursus Magnus.
Intercursus Malus, that's it, yes.
Intercursus Malus.
That's the one.
We got there eventually.
Yes, because apparently that's how you can spot someone from Flanders, is how they say bread and cheese. And as soon as they said it, I mean, there must have been people from Flanders practicing their English accent for bread and cheese.
Yeah. I mean, if riots aren't enough to indicate that you should not go forward with this treaty, I don't know what is. And yet Edward continued on with the marriage.
Had he burnt his bridges by then? I mean, was the offer still open from Louis, or had Louis said...
Oh, I'm sure he could have turned around and gone back to Louis and said, you know what, we'll take that, and Louis would have done it.
Right.
I mean, you'd
have thought, with the amount that Louis was giving up, you'd have thought that he'd say, well, no. I mean, I offered you all this, and you went to somebody who wants vast quantities of money. I mean, what does it take?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Finally, in 1468, Margaret leaves her home at the Royal Wardrobe and is led to the ports in Cheapside to be seen off for her marriage by those who stood surety for her dowry. And that's all it says. So does that mean she's surrounded by merchants?
I don't know. Are they going to make sure that she gets there safely? Because, you know, the last thing you want is for dying of seasickness on the way over.
Oh, I don't know. They only saw her off. They didn't. It doesn't say that they got onto the boat.
Right. So how long did this marriage, because the actual negotiations didn't take so long, but how long did it, the whole thing take in the end?
The whole marriage? It started in 1465. It was finished in 1468. 3 years in total.
Hmm.
From, yeah. Margaret was also given a gift of plate from the City of London, which I didn't realize cities would be handing over gifts for a duchess's wedding. She wasn't really a princess, and she was the sister of a king, but she's not getting married to a king. She's getting married to a duke. So I thought that was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, you'd have thought she would be thinking, well, hang on a minute. You know, when I wasn't a princess, I was saying I was a princess. Now I'd like to be a princess.
Yes.
You're offering me duchess.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. I wish we had an answer to this of whether or not Warwick ever did resign himself to the marriage. But Margaret rode pillion behind him on his horse through London, which is, I'm assuming, is a public display of, yes, I am okay with this marriage, please stop rioting. Kind of thing.
Quite an intimate moment, you feel, riding pillion.
Yeah. For those that don't know, riding pillion is riding behind them. You're just holding onto their waist. It took her 3 days to get to the coast, stopping once with her brothers Clarence and Richard, Duke of Clarence, sorry, George and Richard.
Mm-hmm. He's always Clarence, isn't he, I think?
Yes, he is. It's Clarence.
He's always Richard, Edward, and Clarence, yes.
Yes. At the shrine of St. Thomas Becket.
Mm-hmm.
She then made a pilgrimage to Canterbury, accompanied by all of her brothers. Edward came this time. And then she boarded the ship, the New Ellen, at Margate. To give you an idea of the scale of the party attending Margaret and her trousseau, 16 large ships were required to transport them across the channel.
Goodness sake.
Look at all my stuff! Yes. I don't think we can understress the importance of this marriage politically in Europe. In order to understand why this is important, we need to look at the political climate. France at this time was a huge aggressor against Aragon, Castile, Burgundy, Brittany, England, the Holy Roman Empire, Italy. This wedding was to cement an alliance against France. Burgundy was possibly the most wealthy collection of properties in Europe and the court the most magnificent. And we don't have to guess at that or assume. We have other courts referencing the fact that they were copying Burgundian building styles, Burgundian customs, Burgundian clothing, Burgundians' pomp and circumstance, and Burgundians' precedences.
And art, as we saw.
And art, yes. I can give you a great example. Hampton Court. That brick with white and black patterns within the red brick structure is actually a Burgundian style of building. Mm. They started that patterning of brick. And it continued. Burgundy continued to be so important that her brother's grandson, Henry VIII, had a palace built in the Burgundian style. So it remained to be one of the most important areas of culture and... I don't know what that word is. Giving out culture to everybody else.
Oh, well. Influence?
Influence, sure. An influence on everybody else. I'm going to leave that in. What is that word? You can tell we don't write scripts. I'm going to sit here going, what is that word? What is that word?
Yeah, Edward was very keen to emulate the Burgundian court, wasn't he? To make it more cosmopolitan and
after he gets exiled there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And less of a backwater, really.
Yeah.
I mean, our very first episode, when we went to talk about art, we said, well, there wasn't any, really.
No, there wasn't any style of music. Well, there was a style of music. You found a style of music.
Yeah, music was different. Yeah, but visual arts, no.
No. And then we look at all the sculptures and stuff at the time and we're like, yes, but that was Parigio Turiano or whatever his name is.
Like,
he's Italian.
Yes.
That's a Dutch painter.
Yes.
I'll just point at other countries. He came from here. He came from there. What did it give us an English artist? Chaucer?
Oh, yeah, I was just trying to think. I was about to say no one until Van Dyck, but I thought, no, he's not English. What am I thinking of? Holbein.
Van Dyck, was that Charles II's reign?
Charles the First.
Charles the First.
Yes. We're but Holbein, no, not English.
Nope.
The
younger or the elder.
Oh, I can't think of his name, the bloke who did the little miniatures.
There was a lady during the Elizabeth era who did some painting for Elizabeth, but I don't remember if she was English or not. I vaguely think she was. We'll find out.
Yeah, we've got plenty of time to find that out.
Yes.
God knows we got plenty of time.
This marriage was so important into the European political game that any high-ranking personage in Europe came to witness the wedding, and those who couldn't commissioned descriptions and illustrations of the wedding.
Mm.
There was a famous 9-day tournament held, and each contest or battle or joust was reported on throughout Europe in a blow-by-blow. We have the most detail about this wedding than we do of any other wedding during this time. For anybody else.
Mm. Oh, perhaps we'll keep it for the Valentine's.
That's what I was just thinking, yeah. Like, there's sections that I just sort of left out of all of them. Like, we're not going to go into this right now. But just the fact that this, we have more detail about this, and it was more magnificent than Arthur and Catherine.
Oh, right. And that was incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Paston accompanied Margaret to Burgundy, and he says, quote, "And by my troth, I have no wit nor remembrance to write to you half the worship that is here." And by worship, he is referring to the nobles and princes and bishops. Everybody who was anybody was there. It's like the Ascot races in England.
And probably just a silly hat, I expect.
I love those hats.
Any idea about what Charles thought of this? Was he keen on the wedding? Did he like her at this point?
I kept him very separate because this is already going to be possibly 4 episodes.
Mm.
He was very proper. He seems to show some affection later, which I'll get into. But I really think we should be adding him as somebody for the Patreon.
Yeah. Yep.
Because he's one busy man.
Oh, yes. And then he gets his face eaten off by wolves. I mean, you can't ask for more than that, can you?
Spoiler.
I think we've mentioned it before.
I think we have. Yes. Okay. Now we need to remember that Edward is a brand new king. He is not the son of a king. He is technically a usurper.
Mm-hmm.
And his sister is about to go on display to all of Europe. He needs to ensure that he is presenting England really well to all this nobility, high-ranking churchmen, and the chroniclers that are there.
That's a hell of a responsibility for Margaret, isn't it?
I know.
But Edward wasn't there.
Edward was not there. I don't know why.
You'd have thought this would be the moment to sort of press the flesh.
No, I know why. I remember why. No, Margaret of Anjou and her son is still out.
Oh, right.
They're in France. You can't leave.
Yeah.
He provided Margaret with an extravagantly luxurious trousseau. Like, he really went all out for this. And it was on display during the procession into Ghent and Bruges. It included jewels, plate, clothing, furniture, horses, cloth of gold. Horses were draped in gold. They had gold jewelry on them. She was accompanied by a vast number of notables, including the Queen's brother, Lord Scale. One of her ladies was Elizabeth Talbot, the Duchess of Norfolk. So he made it out that his sister, a duchess, was so high ranking that she deserved a duchess as a servant.
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy. He did everything he could to make her look just as important as the Duke of Burgundy and anybody else who was there. She came in high flying. It would be like her showing up in, I don't know, a Lamborghini.
Yes.
Hi. Oh, I had it bedazzled, but these are diamonds. They're not Swartz feet crystals. Margaret lucked out in her channel crossing. Unlike others that we have heard, it only took 1.5 days and there was no seasickness. So when she came out, she was stately. Her bearing was perfect. She didn't look pale and interested.
1.5 days?
1.5 days.
1.5 days to cross the channel.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember how long it takes on the ferry. 3 hours, something like that.
Those have motors.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And yeah, I suppose it's fine if you're just having to go across from one side to the other and it doesn't matter where you end up. But yeah, if you're trying to aim for a particular place, you've got
Well, how long did it take Philip to end up crashing into England?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Coming from Burgundy, who is her step-grandson, Margaret's step-grandson.
Yeah.
I don't know. Her reception was very unlike Catherine of Aragon's. It was down to the T of being perfect on precedence and protocol. There was no, hey, we're going to show up at your bedroom and make you come out so we can look at you. Ducal chamberlains arrived with musicians playing trumpets and clarions. They greeted her properly. She did not meet her husband the first day. That was against protocol. She did not meet her in-laws on the first day. That was against protocol. They had arrived in Sluie. How do you say that?
S-L-U-I-E. I don't know.
I tried Googling it and it kept saying, do you mean Sluvie? I was like, what is Sluvie?
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I've come across it a few times and thought, Sluvie? Sluvie?
Sluvie?
Not sure. Not sure.
The entire place was decked out for celebration and people were having a grand time. It was nothing but a party. She was met with people from Sluie with more money. More money came to her from the merchants in Sluie. They didn't give gifts of flowers and stuff. They gave you actually just sacks of coin. Which is hilarious. Here, clunk.
Yes, it's a bit like we didn't know what to get you, so we just got you money.
Yeah,
we got you
exactly.
We got you a gift voucher, an Amazon token. Is that all right?
Yes. She was brought in, she was made comfortable in her home for the time that she was staying in there. And only then, the day after she arrived, she first met with her new mother-in-law, the Dowager Duchess Isabel, and Charles's daughter, the Lady Mary. Mary was 11 years old at this time. I love that age. I love that age. They are so much fun.
Yeah.
And I wonder what it would have been like at the meeting of Margaret and Isabel. She's meeting her stepmother.
Oh, yeah.
Mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Mother-in-law, sorry.
Mother-in-law, yeah.
And you always think of that as being a really awkward meeting. And quite often the mother-in-law is portrayed as this dragon. That doesn't appear to be the case here. They both knelt to each other for a very long time. And it was observed how long they kept kneeling to each other. So what I'm wondering is, okay, she's the Duchess. She's my mother-in-law. I'm going to kneel to her to the last because I want to show her respect. And the mother-in-law wondering, she's the daughter of a king. I'm not the daughter of a king.
A bit like the applause for Stalin, wasn't it? Nobody daring to be the first to stop.
But that was mentioned by pretty much every chronicler. The amount of respect that was shown for how long they stayed kneeling to each other and greeting.
Kneeling is agony.
Yes, it is, especially when, well, Isabel would have been in her 50s.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Funky knees, probably.
But I do love to say that the relationship that developed between the two of them does appear quite fond.
Good.
Yeah, the letters going back and forth.
That must make a world of difference when you're being sent across to a different country.
Yeah. Yeah.
To a husband that you've never met. To have a welcoming mother-in-law must make a huge difference.
Yes. And the first mentions between Margaret and the Lady Mary, Charles's daughter, again, it's almost like, I don't know which one's more charismatic, but everybody seems to have fallen in love with Margaret.
Hmm.
Including the 11-year-old.
Yeah.
And I'd be terrified as an 11-year-old to meet my new stepmom.
Hmm.
Yeah. Nope. Not a problem. And they stayed together quite a bit.
Yeah, I remember. Now. Yeah, I remember when we did Maximilian's that. Mary was very fond of Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maximilian becomes very fond of Margaret too.
Mm.
It's everyone interesting. Loves Margaret. Everyone loves Margaret.
Not everyone loves Margaret.
Except no. If our listeners listen back to the previous episodes of Perkin Warbeck, and I believe Isabel's episode, Isabel of Castile, Lucy and I speak of Margaret of Burgundy stamping her little foot.
Mm-hmm.
When Margaret meets Charles, we finally hear a description of her attributes.
Okay.
She's not beautiful, but she is attractive. She is slender. She stands up straight, has a wonderful bearing, an oval face with dark gray eyes, and she is very intelligent. But the most notable attribute that is mentioned everywhere, remember that her brother is 6'3".
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She is tall. She is very tall. And her new husband was a short man.
Right.
The difference between their heights stood out to everybody quite starkly when Margaret is described to have to stoop to kiss him.
And he's on tippy-toe, presumably.
Yeah, that doesn't say a few inches of difference in height.
Yeah.
And if she's that tall, I sort of doubt she has tiny little feet that she can stamp. She's got these big boats. Clunk, clunk.
Well, I can sympathise with her. Being married to someone who's 6'4", I can sympathise with poor Charles.
Oh, hello! He goes up on a couple of stairs. They bring a stepladder for him every time.
Yeah, well, that's how we do it. Sorry, I didn't mean that to be implied.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Charles and Margaret didn't meet until a couple of days after she arrived, and that was by protocol. He honored her in every way, including the way he spoke to her and the way he kissed her. She was going to be his wife after all, but he also kissed all the other noble ladies and gentlewomen present, because apparently that's what he was told the English did. Which they
were
did.
Great kisses at that time, yeah.
Yeah. They then had a formal betrothal where they both, while in the same room, stated again their intention and confirmed that it was their own will to get married.
And they're better after all this. One of them said, no, I've changed my mind. It would be.
Yeah. I had no idea you were so tall.
Yes. I didn't know you were so short.
Margaret stayed in Sluis for the rest of the week, as protocol demanded. And also because the dowry had to be counted and provided to Burgundy.
Right.
Oh, it's
one,
so romantic.
Two.
Yeah, exactly.
Peeling off the notes.
Receivers. It took four receivers to count it and make sure that it was paid in full before the wedding ceremony was held. This is so romantic.
Isn't it?
There was an additional reason for the delay in the wedding. So it might have been somebody saying to the receivers, count slowly, count slowly. John Paston mentions in his letters that they had to wait for the Lancastrian noble exiles to leave so right. that she could go into the city where she was to get married. So the Duke of Exeter and the Duke of Somerset were in exile in Burgundy. And they couldn't be there for a Yorkist wedding. what was Charles doing? Hedging his bets? She might not actually make it across the channel.
She might not
we'll
turn
wait till
up.
She actually arrives. They may not have brought the entire dowry. You stay here. The more you read into this, the yes. more romantic it becomes.
Yeah. Right, it's all here. Out, out, out. Go on.
Get, go, quick. You were never here.
Do you think they're sneaking out the back door as she's coming in the front?
Yeah. It was only once they'd all been cleared out that Margaret went up the river by barge to Dam, where they would be married. The morning after her arrival, her and Charles were finally married in a private ceremony.
All right, how many thousands of people in this private ceremony?
None. Oh. It was actually a private ceremony. Like, who got married in a private ceremony? Henry and Jane Seymour got married in a tiny private ceremony. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you'd have, I mean, and Anne Boleyn had literally only just been executed.
And I wonder how Margaret felt during all of this. Everyone was giving her the utmost respect. She was getting gifts handed to her left, right, and center.
She must have felt like a princess.
Yes. And I couldn't think of a worse thing ever happening to me.
Oh, God.
Being the center of that much attention.
Oh, horrible.
No,
horrible.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Everybody around me is always surprised that I'm doing a podcast that tons of people are listening to. And I'm like, no, no, no. It's just me and Lucy.
Yes.
I only see Lucy.
I should think most podcasters are introverted. Yes. Antisocial. Yes. That's just why would you sit in a room and talk to someone 2,000 miles away?
Let's see. I'm in my home. I can turn it off anytime I need to. And then I'm done my socializing for the week.
Yes. I can tick that off my to-do list. Talk to someone.
I have humaned. That's what I call it, humaning. I fail at humaning when I'm in person. Please leave me alone. She was provided a gilded litter. So much like Queen Elizabeth II, Chucky III. I'll just offend every English person out there.
Wow.
Charles III.
You're not offending me. Yeah, apparently that's really uncomfortable. It has hardly any suspension in it at all. And
how could it? That carriage is so heavy.
Yeah, you're thrown about all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't tried.
She had a gilded litter. Sorry?
I haven't tried it. I mean, I'm taking this on hearsay.
Oh, I'd just like to go and touch it. I don't know why. Touching history feels more real. I need to touch things. Yeah, so gilded litter, which of course had crimson cloth of gold draped over it, as well as the cushions inside, okay. So more gold, for her to arrive at her wedding with matching white horses pulling the litter. Elizabeth arrived at... Oh, yeah. Elizabeth I. If we see her coronation portrait, she arrived with her hair down.
Virginal.
Yes. Margaret does the same on the way to her wedding. However, that's not done in Burgundy.
Oh, right. Just looked as if she hadn't bothered.
Yes. Let's say... women of ill repute wore their hair down.
Oh. Oh, dear.
So all of the descriptions in the Chronicle, I love that they're almost, it's like us in texting where you put something in all caps. They're very firmly written that she wore her hair down, but it was honorably worn down.
She's not a prostitute.
Nobody tell you when you were getting ready this morning. No, I only had English women helping me get ready. Oops.
Yeah, you'd have thought there would be someone just...
a protocol teacher.
Yes, just doing the protocol.
I was thinking of what's his name?
Birchard.
Burchard, yeah. Yes. Burchard sitting there going, no. Before she
For people who
anything.
Don't remember, he was the...
C-3PO.
Much put upon protocol instructor for Pope Alexander, who yes. had no interest in protocol whatsoever.
Nope. Yes,
so do we know, because we've just said we'd hate this, do we know, did she revel in it? Do we know that?
We don't.
But she did.
Probably. For what she does later in her life, I would think she enjoys being the center of attention.
Mm.
Like a lot of her actions, I found there could have been another introverted way to do it. But she doesn't. She goes for the most, here I am. Yes. Yeah.
Let's get the party started. Yeah.
Okay. And the fact that she seems to be charismatic and people fall in love with her everywhere she goes makes me think she has to be extroverted, because us introverts, we don't speak.
No, people don't fall in love with us.
No. They wonder what weird things you're doing.
Okay, yeah, Caxton was very taken with her, wasn't he?
Yes. Lots of people were. We're not going to go into many more descriptions of what was going on because, one, it would take up an entire show. So, yeah, I think a Valentine's episode would be good. But also, Margaret didn't do it herself. This was other people. She just had to follow protocol, yeah. which she failed in the first part.
And it will keep us off the inappropriate Valentine's episodes about sex that we've got planned.
Yes. Yeah. Showing the fact that this was a trade agreement between two countries, it's noted, so they had a private ceremony and then they went to their big reception and feasts and processions and everything. The attendance of the merchants, and I love that they're listed, English, of course, Flemish, of course, but also Spanish merchants, Scottish merchants, Florentine merchants, Venetian merchants, Genoese, and more that couldn't be identified were right. in the processions. And then I started wondering, why? Why would all those... I get the Flemish, I get the English, but what about the rest? And then I realized... Well, I didn't realize, sorry. I read a historian who was doing the economics of Europe. And I wouldn't recommend his paper. Okay. The information was great, but it was definitely reading an economics paper. Okay. It was that kind of thing. So if you're looking for light reading, don't read it.
Okay.
If you're looking for actual information... He was great. To make sense of why the other country merchants were involved, he was looking at how trade agreements affect everybody in an area. So if you have a trade agreement with better exchange rates between one country and another, trade increases in that location, benefiting all the merchants in that location, not just those who are from that location.
Oh, right.
So all of the merchants in Burgundy would be excessively happy. They're about to make more money than they have before. So yeah, everybody was there. But I do really like this because it brings us in to some of our other episodes. The Florentine merchants were led by a Tommaso Portinari. Who
Rings
is...
a bell.
He's one of the Medici's main agents for loans.
Right. Is that where the money's come from to get this wedding up and running? I mean, apart from the stuff they've managed to get out of the...
I actually don't know.
Mm.
I don't know. All of the merchants were noted to provide gifts to Margaret, and you can bet those gifts vied with each other for opulence and value. Mm.
Oh,
if you're on display to the whole city and all these chroniclers, you don't want to give her, I made you socks.
Yes. It's a toaster.
They're made of gold. They're gold socks.
Yeah, I mean, if you want good presents, make sure you've got a table out and tell people to put them on there where everyone can see them.
And if it breaks,
I want another one.
If the table breaks, then it's a good gift. One thing I also found interesting, we've spoken before for mottos and sobriquets that women took when they married a king. And I believe it was on that Rex Factor pub quiz that we were invited to be on, that we were discussing Jane Seymour, Anne Boleyn's, and
yes.
Catherine of Aragon's. They got to choose their mottos.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it's because of the generational gap, because those marriages were quite a bit later, or if it's the fact that she's in Burgundy, but Margaret doesn't get to choose her motto. It's given to her.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem logical.
No. And what does she end up with then?
May good ensue.
Yeah.
It's almost like somebody going, what do we want to write? We want to write what we're going to get out of her. Oh, good things.
Hmm.
Yeah, so again, even her motto doesn't give us any clue to her character because she didn't get to choose it.
Yeah.
But yeah, is that a tradition in the two countries? I don't know. Then came the famous jousts and tournaments that lasted until July 13th. So they were about a month for the celebrations. An entire month of being on display for celebrations.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah.
And I always find Christmas... By the day after Boxing Day, I think, right, that's it.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah. But they just drag it on and on and on, don't they?
Forever. Yeah. 1 month for a marriage celebration. And that's 1 month, not from the time she arrived, but the 1 month from the time that the money was counted. So you get time before then, too. Yeah. Oh, no, thank you. Not at all.
And everybody looking, is it going all right? Or do they seem to be getting on?
You know, do you think they consummated the marriage?
Yes. Probably more detail than that they'd be after. That seems to be what's come across. That just saying yes and no, it's not nearly enough.
Nope. With Margaret's marriage completed, her titles increased dramatically. She is the Duchess of Burgundy and of Lotharingia, Limburg, Luxembourg, Brabant, and Gelders. She is the Countess of Artois, Burgundy, Flanders, Hainault, Holland, Namur, Zeeland, Zutphen. She is the Marchioness of the Holy Roman Empire, linking her with Maximilian.
Mm.
She is also the Lady of Friesland, Malines, and of Salins. If nothing else, this list tells you how busy the Dukes of Burgundy were in conquering and marrying into or negotiating additional lands.
But there's one missing off that. She's not a princess.
She's not a princess. No, the Dukes of Burgundy are often called the king without a crown during this time because of how much power and how much... They actually have more land put together than England does.
Oh, really?
It's much bigger.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Charles the Bold joins big chunks of it together as well, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he got sick of this idea of, excuse me, please, can I come through?
Yes. Yes. Can I pay you to come through? Because quite often it meant money.
Mm, just imagine.
Mm-hmm. And here is where we get a surprise. Charles's view of marriage. Her role is to provide heirs and solidify the alliance with the English against the French. Nothing else. You are not here to help me. You are not here to play any political part. You are not to be involved in the government at all.
Did she know that before she went? Or is this a bit of a slap in the face?
I really don't know.
Because it's very different reading about Italian ones. And the wives are always, the ones I've come across, apart from Florence, which is a bit different. But the wives are always just... They have to be up there helping because the husband is away fighting. They usually got a sideline as a condottieri, so they're off fighting a lot. So they have to be. But then Charles was off fighting a lot as well, isn't he? So they got a council, presumably.
Yep. And the question we will look at in the next couple of episodes is, how on earth does she end up being a major political player?
Mm.
When she's not allowed.
Well, there's a cliffhanger and I've never heard one.
You mentioned cliffhangers and I wrote one. And that is the end of our episode one for Margaret. Hope you enjoyed it.
Did? Thank you. And it was such a treat just to be able to sit here and listen.
And it feels so good to be back in this.
Yeah.
A little weird. I now have a text-to-speech program, or a speech-to-text program called Dragon Naturally Speaking, because my eyes don't work anymore. And it really has a hard time when you change languages. Oh, right. Or start naming place names that don't exist anymore. It just gives you these question marks, 3 question marks. What? Yeah. It'll learn. It's a learning software.
All right, so that's handy. So everything that you've said.
Yeah, you stop, you spell that, and you give it a definition, and then it will remember it for next time.
Mm.
So it's supposed to get better. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
Goodbye.